Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Thursday, April 20th. Now our monthly Call Your Senator segment with Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. You ask what you want, I'll be asking about some of the following topics, depending on what we can get in. The senator's new five-point aging plan, as she calls it, her bill to expand and preserve SNAP benefits, food stamps, also maybe the recent intelligence leak for the senator's role in the Armed Services and Intelligence Committees, the debt ceiling, or maybe we should call it the full faith and credit of the United States government cliff that's coming up. What happens if the Supreme Court allows the abortion pill mifepristone to be banned? And should Senator Dianne Feinstein resign? Senator Gillibrand has an opinion about that. Senator, always good of you to do this. Welcome back to WNYC.
My pleasure, Brian.
Your five-point aging plan. This isn't like eat well, exercise, and get regular checkups, right?
Not exactly, but it makes all those things possible. So the first thing is ensuring that they have access to affordable and healthy meals. There's about 5 million older adults in the United States, including 7% of older adults in New York, that are food insecure. And so it's a real issue. And we have great programs in New York that deliver hot meals once a day. All those programs need to be funded because our seniors, our older Americans need access to nutrition because it helps them actually thrive. The second issue, similar to the things you mentioned, access to good, affordable health care. So we have to protect Medicare to make sure it continues. We have to keep lowering the cost of medicines, like we just did in the Democratic bill we passed last year on the five major medicines that older Americans use. We want to apply that to all medicines. And things like a cap on insulin at $35 a month really helps. So similar types of caps. The third big idea is making sure we protect financial security. So that's protecting Social Security and making sure that we can enhance Social Security so it keeps up with the rising cost of living, as well as legislation to protect our seniors from all the financial fraud. I've talked about that before, where scammers will call up seniors and try to steal their money through lots of different ploys. There's the IRS scam where they say you didn't pay your taxes or we're coming to your door with the FBI if you don't send this money, or the grandchild scam where they'll say this is your grandson, I'm arrested, I need you to send money for my bail. Unfortunately, that happens all the time, and these criminal networks are very sophisticated. The next big idea is safeguarding the right to age in place. A lot of people would prefer to stay in their homes, but they might have medical conditions or other issues that make it harder. So we want to have better training and better wages for home health aides so they can actually have more home health aides available to do that. We also want to give a Social Security caregiver credit, meaning that they can actually buy into their Social Security even though they're not being paid. They will get resources into their Social Security. And making sure that we have more home-based and community-based services through Medicaid. And so that's that group of ideas. And then the last idea is making sure older Americans have access to friendly spaces, employment, things they can do outside their homes. So simple things like better lighting on sidewalks, safer sidewalks, time to cross the street, more legal protections for those who want to work while they're older. There's a lot of discrimination. If you're over 55, people like to fire you because you're now a high-cost worker in exchange for a lower-cost worker, and it's real age discrimination. So I'm teaming up with Lindsey Graham to actually guarantee that people can sue for age discrimination in a court of law and not have to sign mandatory non-disclosure agreements or mandatory arbitration, similar to what we just did last year on sexual harassment, sexual assault in the workplace. So that's my master plan. Lots of good ideas to help seniors be happier and be able to thrive where they are.
That's a lot. How much of that do you think you can get through Congress? You mentioned that one piece that you're doing with Senator Graham. Does he have enough Republicans on board to pass even that non-discrimination piece of it, or is this mostly something for you and other Democrats to run on next year and try to kind of shame the Republicans with, since you're proposing perhaps a bunch of things that won't have the votes to pass?
Well, I think the bill with Lindsey Graham has real opportunities for this Congress. The last time Lindsey and I teamed up on the sexual harassment and assault in the workplace, guaranteeing the right to sue in court and to not sign a non-disclosure agreement, that passed unanimously. So I'm optimistic. And now, you can be discriminated against for lots of reasons, but what Lindsey decided was he'd go one by one, which, you know, is better than nothing. So I'm doing the one by one with him. So we're doing age discrimination this Congress. I think it'll help. I think that's something that could actually get done. I also think the food security is something that could possibly get done, because older Americans really are food insecure. And as we know, the cost of food has gone up. So I think there'll be some bipartisan support for that in the farm bill. So I'm optimistic there. And then the other one that's bipartisan already is the Senior Financial Empowerment Act, which is the anti-financial fraud tools. So that we've had a bunch of hearings on that in the Aging Committee, and that is a very bipartisan issue and a bipartisan idea.
I see U.S. government statistics that about 70% of SNAP or food stamp recipients are in families with children. What's this new bill regarding SNAP benefits?
So one of our problems is during COVID, we saw a huge increase in need for food assistance. And so we strengthened this Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the SNAP program, to give more resources in an easier way. So we made it easier to apply. We wanted to make sure if you're eligible for one type of support that you're automatically eligible for this type of support. And so we're trying to streamline access to SNAP benefits and make them more generous. And we're trying to do this in the Farm Bill. But you're quite right. So a typical person who's on the SNAP program are kids, older Americans, people with disabilities, active duty service members, and veterans. Those are often the most low-income families in our communities, and they need these extra resources to feed their families and stay healthy. It's not a huge benefit. It's about $2.10 a meal. So you're only getting just over $6 a day, but it makes a huge difference because they can have access to more protein, access to more fruits and vegetables to keep people safe. We're the richest country in the world. This is one where we should making sure hunger is not part of our country. We should be feeding people. And food is medicine for so many people. We're also working on medically appropriate meals for our veterans, specifically because if you can get medically appropriate meals for older Americans, it increases their health outcomes by like 17%. It's a huge uptick in health and well-being, which lowers costs for the VA. So if you're focused on healthy food, it's going to save money all across the board, because if kids aren't hungry at school, they can concentrate. They'll do better at school. They'll have better academic outcomes. They'll have better jobs. It all helps the economy and communities thrive.
Kathy in Nyack is calling with a SNAP benefits related question. Kathy, you're on WNYC with Senator Gillibrand. Hi there.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just really wanted to follow up on the question about the SNAP benefits and the Farm Bill, because what you said before, Senator, about the cost of food going up. And, you know, I just want to know how the negotiations are really going in the Ag Committee and about this. But I'm particularly worried because the cost of food is going up, and some of that is due to our farm system and our agricultural system, which is very threatened by a lot of things going on right now. But particularly what I'm particularly concerned about is, is the changing climate, which affects how much food we can grow and where we grow it. And we're growing in, drought areas, or they switch from one year to the next from drought to flooding. And that aspect of it, which we're not really are we addressing that? And that, of course, is going to raise the cost of food. And then, you know, how many people need the food stamps? Probably the need will only go up. So I just wanted to, you know, ask,
yeah,
you know, how those negotiations are going and whether, you know, that aspect of the changing climate and the lack, you know, running out of water in certain parts of the country is being addressed, you know, in the negotiations.
It's really a great question, and it's something that people aren't all that aware of in the East, in New York State, but what's going on with the Colorado River and freshwater availability in the West overall with the change in climate, it's a big deal, Senator. Do you hear about that from your Western state colleagues?
I do. The threat to droughts, the wildfires, the effects it's having on our rivers. Thank you, caller, for your insights. You're quite right. Global climate change, a warming planet, is really harming our agricultural capabilities. And we are seeing huge impacts on our abilities across the country to grow the food we need. So I've always seen agriculture as a national security issue. We have to produce enough food to feed our people, because we've seen through COVID what it looks like when supply chains are disrupted, when you can't get access to food or access to important things like computer chips. You can't get access to basic materials that you need to build. And this has been the reality for a long time over the last few years because of COVID. And food prices continue to rise for a couple of reasons, not only supply chain issues that were disrupted because of COVID, but also fuel costs have gone up because we don't have positive relationships right now with the Middle East producers. So there's a lot of solutions that we have to focus on. The first thing we focused on last year is we passed billions of dollars into green energy projects. This is going to mean money is going to come to renewable energy so that we can get off fossil fuels and our dependence on the Middle East. It's going to come in through Department of Agriculture to do different types of investments, like get rid of brownfields so that we have clean air, clean water, making sure we have USDA grants so we can have value-added businesses around our farms to help stabilize our farms. We're creating more farm-to-food types of farm-to-table type of programs so that our farms in upstate New York can feed our larger communities in New York City. All of those things help strengthen our food economy and our agricultural economy. So the more we work on building up our agricultural capability and our energy independence, as well as our food independence, we're going to be able to bring the cost of food down because we won't have to ship it large distances. The shipping costs have driven up a lot, and a lot of people have now realized, for example, a dairy farmer, they're going to grow their own feed. They're not going to ship their feed from somewhere else now. They're going to focus on how they can deliver their milk locally as opposed to larger exports, because supply chain and transportation costs are so high. So we need big thinkers in Congress who are going to look in the long term about how to address global climate change directly, how to strengthen our agriculture and strengthen our agriculture within New York itself, and make sure that states like California aren't disproportionately our growers, because in a state that now suffers from droughts and floods constantly, they're not going to be able to be the breadbasket of the fruits and vegetables of our country. That should really come more to the Hudson Valley. It should come to places like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, where we have cooler climates and can and really create large, long-term investments in farmland and renewable energies through those farmlands, whether we're doing wind or solar or biofuels. All those opportunities exist in the East and in the Southeast.
Wow, that's a really interesting big think view of our food system. And Kathy and Nyack, thank you for prompting that answer. As a member of the Intelligence and Armed Services Committee, I want to ask you about the leak of classified documents, allegedly by Jack Teixeira, that 21-year-old Air National Guard member The New York Times says some of the material provides a level of detail about the strengths and weaknesses of the Russian and Ukrainian forces that American officials have been reluctant to discuss. How serious do you see the consequences being of that breach for the war in Ukraine?
I think the consequences, writ large, are very serious. I think it will not necessarily have a deep negative impact on the war in Ukraine specifically. I think the leak overall is very concerning because this was a 20-year-old who had enough access to see documents that had such a wide range of highly important intelligence information. And I sit on armed services and I sit on intel. I went to the debriefing yesterday. I asked questions about access, about chain of custody, about why this young airman, guardsman had such extreme access, what we can do about it. The investigation has not been completed, so I actually didn't get answers to the questions I asked. And so I hope that we are having additional hearings within Armed Services and within the Intel Committee about what we intend to do going forward. This is the second IT specialist who's leaked documents. We had the Snowden case as well, which was very different. And we put in place many reforms after the Snowden case. But my questions were, why didn't those reforms work here? Isn't there any way to make sure someone who's an IT expert doesn't have full access to the content of all the materials?
Sure.
Obviously, this person seemed quite immature and broke, you know, really committed serious crimes. And it's just very, very concerning that such a young person would have so much access to such important information. And I have serious concerns about the facility, because normally there should be chain of custody requirements about who handles those documents and what they do with them. And I'm very interested in getting the facts once this investigation is done.
Snowden's motivation was transparency and too much government surveillance as he saw it. Do you know Jack Teixeira's motivation?
I only know what you know. He wanted to post it online to brag to his friends, to his chat group, in a particular chat group that is used by a lot of young people, gamers, a gamers community. And we don't know all the facts, but once we do, we'll have a better insight on what his motivation may have been. It sounded like it was just pure irresponsibility.
Craig in Pleasantville, you're on WNYC with Senator Gillibrand. Hi, Craig. We just have a couple of minutes, right to the point.
Okay. Hi. Good morning. Senator, I was wondering if you could comment on the abortion medicine mifepristone based on four aspects of the legal case. The first aspect being that the Texas judge's decision seems to have been indefensible and wasn't legally sound, since the plaintiffs weren't able to demonstrate they were harmed by the medicine. The second point is that the statute of limitations expired to proceed with litigation, so I'm not sure why we're even hearing about this. Point number three, in federal administrative law, courts are supposed to defer to judgments of expert agency sources to guide their decisions, and the FDA is the expert source in this matter.
Craig, I'm gonna leave it there because we're running short of time, but you're also making an argument that would go to a court. Senator Gillibrand, I'm sure you agree with everything he just said, or imagine that you do. And so maybe the more relevant question is, if the court system blocks access in whole or in part, is there anything left you can do in a gridlock Congress, or that you think President Biden can do in the executive branch without Congress? But of course, if you want to address his direct points, you can.
Well, I appreciate the caller's insightful analysis. I agree with them. And in fact, I was one of the 240 members of Congress that submitted an amicus brief to the Fifth Circuit making some of those arguments about the inappropriateness of this judge's ruling. First of all, this medicine has been approved by the FDA and has been used safely for 20 years. And so not only did they lack standing because there was no harm, that there was no harm by taking the medicine, but they are so off base to try to undermine an FDA's decision that has been implemented effectively and safely for 20 years. So I agree with you. And so the question is, you know, what can we do? What we've seen from the courts, particularly from the Supreme Court, is an all-out assault on women's reproductive freedom, our basic civil rights, and our basic civil liberties. And the Dobbs decision went so far as not just to eliminate a right to abortion, they eliminated the right to privacy, which is so far overreaching and so extreme. We're seeing these radical judges and right-wing legislatures act on this lack of right to privacy. And so the extension of no right to privacy means you don't have privacy to the mails. You don't have privacy to your emails or your Facebook conversations with your mother or your conversations with your doctor. And so they are invading every aspect of someone's right to privacy in whole. And these legislatures and right-wing, very conservative judges are trying to erode all those rights. The good news for those of us who believe in equality and believe in reproductive freedom and believe in a right to privacy is that Americans are fighting back all across the country. One of the best things we can be doing right now, until we have enough senators and Democrats in the House to actually codify Roe or codify a right to privacy, is these ballot initiatives. Since Dobbs, six states have held referendums on reproductive rights, and in each state, voters have moved to affirm access to abortion and reproductive freedom. Montana, Kentucky, Kansas, Michigan, and Vermont. All of those states have done something to fight for reproductive freedom. California put rights, codified them into their own constitution. So did Vermont. And so in red places like Montana, Kentucky, and Kansas, for the women of that state to be guaranteed these reproductive rights, I think is very inspiring. So we're going to keep fighting, and we should do state by state until we flip the House and have one more Democratic senator, which might take one cycle or two cycles to get done. Then we can codify this right to privacy and codify reproductive freedom, along with our hopeful civil voting rights, along with LGBTQ equality. I would do all those civil rights together by amending the filibuster. So that would be my highest priority if we can get one more Democratic vote in the Senate.
A quick follow-up on that, and then we're out of time, and I appreciate so much time today. After Montana, Kentucky, and Kansas, as you cite, do you see the Democrats trying to get lots of abortion rights referenda on the ballot in swing states for next year? Most abortion rights are popular in most places, as with those examples, and some analysts say a wave of referenda could not only preserve abortion rights in many states, it could also increase turnout on your party side to help you win the Senate and the presidency.
So, yes, I think states are going to do that. Already Ohio and Florida have said that they're going to have a referendum. And even in New York, Brian, we're going to have a referendum in 2024, which is very meaningful because we need to enshrine these rights in our Constitution and show the rest of the country that this is something that they should also do. Reproductive freedom is a basic human right. The right to privacy is something that almost anyone alive today assumed would never be abrogated or invaded. You talk to men who won't necessarily have the same crisis on reproductive issues, but they may, because they may have spouses, they may have daughters, they may have mothers who have these challenges. But they certainly believe that they have a right to freedom of the mail. They certainly believe they have the right to privacy in their communications online, whether it's on Facebook or on email. They certainly believe they have the right to privacy in conversations with doctors. And they don't expect that they would be denied access to certain medications because of the personal views of some judge in Texas. That's what's so obscene and absurd about where we are today. That judge is imposing his personal views, his medical judgment over the FDA, his religious preferences on everyone, which is against our Constitution, against the freedom of speech, against the freedom of religion, against due process, against what we believe is the right to privacy, which is the combination of several of these constitutional rights. It's not the America we know, and people need to wake up. They need to know this is what the attack is about. And women and their allies need to be all in on this, no matter where they live. And for our male friends and loved ones, this should be their fight, too, because They take away women's rights. They take away LGBTQ rights. They're going to take away your rights to privacy in the bedroom, and I'm sure you care about that one. It's really important, and so this should be your fight, too.
And that's our monthly Call Your Senator segment with New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand for April. Senator, thanks as always. Talk to you in May.
Thanks so much, Brian. It's always great to be on.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.